it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening. Welcome in. It's the Christian Arcan Show here, WEEI. We are live in our Brighton studios, powered by Verizon. We are Boston Sports Original, and we are here with you for about 90 minutes or so tonight before we hand things over to Thursday Night Football. Pretty good game tonight, Packers and the Commanders. So keep it right here on WEEI all throughout the evening, as I'm sure you are already planning to. No Red Sox tonight. They have the night off. We had Sam Kennedy on this morning with the Greg Hill Show. I want to react to some things that he had to say, including that little bit right there about Alex Bregman. But before we started the show, I just wanted to say, I know it's a kind of a tough day for a lot of people. It's a tough day for me. September 11th, I had a cousin who passed away in the towers back on September 11th, 24 years ago. And this year is a particularly tough one because when my cousin died, he was 23, and it's been 24 years since it happened. And for some reason, like, it's been a lot of years in a row of this, obviously. But this one was different. You know, this is now, it's sort of like, oh, my God, like, this is history now. And it just, in a different way from the usual sadness that you feel on a day like this, just hit me a little bit differently. So rest in peace to him and everybody who passed away on September 11th, my cousin Matt Salito. And also that awful thing that happened in Utah yesterday as well. Again, that is not a person that I know much about. I didn't watch any of his shows or anything like that. I only really ever saw brief clips on the internet of him, but that was gruesome and horrific. And it's a tough day for a lot of people today, I think. It's just, you know, it's a hard day. It's a hard day to sort of get through. And we'll just do our best here tonight with the 90 minutes that we have, and then we'll turn our feelings and attention over to the National Football League like we always tend to do in situations like this, and try and forget about it. Or not forget about it, but you know what I mean. Try and think about something else. So that's what we're here to do. And we're going to start with the Red Sox. And the Red Sox, I think kind of an off-day check-in is worth doing here because you got a big series coming up starting tomorrow. You got the Yankees in town, a team that you have dominated this entire year, just dominated. And for the Red Sox to have, I don't want to say the season on the brink right now, because it's not really on the brink like that, but in terms of what their aspirations are, if their aspirations include really competing for that American League East and really bypassing these Yankees and making a beeline towards the Blue Jays, then this type of series, I mean, this is it. You got the Blue Jays at the end of the year. So that may end up being like the actual big deal. But you and the Yankees right now are tied. Not exactly tied. They're 80-65. You're 81-66. But it's the same. You're same 3.5 games back at Toronto. Same, same. And for that, I think that there is a big-time expectation that the Yankees are just lambs to the slaughter coming into Fenway, and the Red Sox are going to do what they've been doing and just completely devour them. And I would love to say that I feel that in my bones, that I feel that in my plums, that the Yankees are coming in here and the Red Sox are going to just destroy them. But I'd be lying if I really, really said that. Now, part of it may just be the fact that I'm a nervous Nelly, that I just, it's hard to really relax with this Red Sox team. And when I say relax, I mean, take for granted the idea that they're going to beat anybody, that they're going to sweep anybody. It's not been that kind of season. There have been stretches like that. Yeah, absolutely. But it's not been that kind of season where you just kick your feet up and you say, no problem, Red Sox got this. They've had stretches. They just finished the stretch like that, as a matter of fact. And the Yankees are a team that just futility when it comes to facing this Red Sox team. And I'll just tell you, my heart just bleeds. Doesn't it? Doesn't that just make you feel sad? Knowing that the Yankees just can't beat the Red Sox this year, isn't that just a terrible thing? It's not really even, I think, one of those random baseball, whatever, you know, like every now and again you'll see something like that where the coin just lands on tails a bunch of time and, you know, the team suddenly feels like they're much better. The Red Sox are a terrible, terrible matchup for the Yankees. Yankees have lefties that the Red Sox are able to hit. The Red Sox pitching staff has some guys in it that the Yankees just cannot figure out. They cannot figure out Crochet. They cannot figure out Brian Bayo. He owns them about as much as any Red Sox pitcher has ever owned the Yankees. And Aroldis Chapman has just been Aroldis Chapman all year except for last night when he suddenly decided to be a human being again instead of a 100-mile-an-hour throwing cyborg that he's been this year. All that to say this. With the Yankees in town and with all of the pomp and circumstance around that series, because after that you got the A's again, you go to Tampa, and then it's Toronto, Detroit, and that's it. We're really coming down the stretch here, folks. We are in the final 2 weeks of the season, basically, once this series is over with New York. And they are going to be desperate to show to themselves, to their fans, to the Steinbrenners, Hal and Hank Steinbrenner, whoever else, that they are not the Red Sox play toy and that they're able to beat this team and that they are able to come to Fenway Park like other teams have done, you know, the Baltimore Orioles and, you know, some other teams recently who have come here and not made things easy, the Pittsburgh Pirates, okay? There's been not that many more examples of it because the Red Sox were so good at home for so long. But it does kind of feel like that magic's over, right? It does sort of feel like that Fenway magic that we saw for most of the second half of the year, really. I mean, since the All-Star break, you could say. And even a little bit before that, the Red Sox did not lose any home games. But that's kind of fallen off a little bit. And I wonder if maybe the Yankee thing will too. Because I do think the Red Sox are a bad matchup for the Yankees, but I also think it's untenable to assume that they're just going to keep dominating this team over and over and over again. They might. But I'm not betting the mortgage on it, so to speak. Let's hear a little bit more from Sam Kennedy. He was talking there about Alex Bregman. And before we move off of that real quick, I do admire how Kennedy is able to kind of twist around what was a pretty credible report there from Jeff Passan about how Bregman is planning to opt out and really make it into a, well, he wants to be here. We want him to be here. You know, all of these, we have a list of guys, and he's at the top of the list, and blah, 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 and da, 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 da. And it's like, yeah, so he's opting out? Like, is that what's going to happen? Like, are we prepping ourselves for this, or what's
the
deal?
Yeah, that's exactly the mentality.
You know, like, I hate to say it, but you don't want to come on the radio and say that. You don't want to come on the radio and say, yeah, he's probably going to opt out, and then we're going to have to go back to the drawing board and offer him some big contract, and the boss doesn't want to do that, but I have to sit here and talk to you, Greg, and pretend like this is all part of the plan. It's definitely not, all right? It's definitely not. They may have already started the plan and started talking and negotiating with Scott Boras, but this isn't the way that they want to do it. They would love for Bregman to just turn to them and say, listen, guys, I love it here so much. Let's take a hometown discount so you can sign some more players or not. And, you know, or just pay me less because I know that's what you want to do. And let's go back out there and let's try and win because I just love it here in Boston so much. The Red Sox have tried that before. They tried it with John Lester, remember? John Lester was begging them for a new contract. And the story I remember is that John Henry and Warner and everybody sat John Lester and his agent down in a room and they played a video and showed like this video of him as like his Hall of Fame acceptance speech and like how he's going to go in and be a Red Sox all-time player. And he showed videos of all these other great Red Sox pitchers over the years. And John, this could be you and blah, 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 blah. And at the end of it, they were like, okay, so what's the offer? It's like,
what were they auditioning for Shark Tank or something?
Maybe. Yeah. You know, Lester and his agent said the offer still
for those
that
reasons.
Offer, for those reasons, we're out and we're going to go to Chicago. And why don't you go ahead and trade us for who'd they trade? Yeah, Cespedes, right? Is that it? Lester for
him and
Cespedes?
Johnny Gomes to the Athletics. Then he goes and signs with the Cubs and
right.
is a hero there too.
He was, and that should never have happened, but it did. And the difference there, and it's a big difference, is that John Lester was this like homegrown kid who went through all that stuff. He was sick and then he got better and then he was this World Series champion and he was good right away when they called him up. He was really, I don't know, he wasn't dominant right away, but he was definitely good right away. And again, as we know now from seeing Peyton Tolley and Connelly Early and these other guys, the Red Sox haven't had a lot of guys like that. I was just saying the other day, like, I can't remember Early and Tolley, and we'll see how good they actually are, but just in terms of hype, Lester and Buchholz is probably the last two starters or two pitchers really in the system that had it going on like that as they were being introduced to the major leagues. Like, it's really uncommon here with the Red Sox and with this team and their farm system and whatever else. But that all being said, John Lester was a lifer. He was a Red Sox lifer. Bregman's been here about 10 minutes. What do you think? He's going to be, oh, yeah, he could be an all-time great Red Sox. He's already an all-time great Houston Astro. What the hell does he care about that? That doesn't mean anything to him. Alex Bregman, you'd love to believe, is this just wholesome guy who just wants to go out there and play ball and mentor the kids, and he's happy to be in Boston, and he loves the history, and blah, 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 blah. Scott Boras is his agent, okay? Stop deifying this guy Bregman. You know, like, he's out to get the most money. He's here in Boston because Boston offered the most money. There were other offers. Detroit made him an offer. It was like $29 per year over 5 years. Houston made him an offer, which was less than that. And, you know, you look at the numbers now, and maybe you can understand a little bit why these Bregman offers weren't particularly high, and how the Red Sox, with $40 million for a year to prove it, looked pretty attractive to him and ended up working out great for the Red Sox, too. I'm not saying it was a bad deal, but, you know, he's not earning $40 million at this point with his defense, with his leadership, and with his bat. Those have all been, you know, fine, but it's not $40 million. Like, that's Juan Soto. That's the best players in the league type of money. And that's not what Bregman is this year. But he is, I think, someone that they should concentrate on trying to keep and emphasize trying to keep. Those are all qualities that I think this team doesn't have a lot of outside of Bregman. You know, Trevor Story's a good leader and a good veteran. But, you know, outside of those two guys, that's really it. You know, you don't really have too much else. So I think that's valuable. I think you pay a little extra for that. And I'm interested in seeing exactly how much Sam Kennedy and this team plans to back up those words. Okay, you love Bregman so much, that's on the record. Better get it done then. Here's some other things that Kennedy said. He also spoke about, this was Bradfoe talking today with Jones and Keefe about Peyton Tolley. And I thought this was interesting as well. Peyton Tolley, if you missed it, got the start yesterday. He only went two innings. He gave up a home run in each inning that he pitched in and didn't look super good. You know, he certainly was the third on the totem pole behind Crochet and behind Early in terms of guys who pitched in the A's series in Sacramento. He was a distant third, I would say, behind those first two. But here's what Bradfoe said to Jones when asked about Peyton Tolley and how he's going to get used going forward.
What's the plan with Peyton Tolley? They've started to load up on the fastball. He's gotten hit a little bit in the last couple of outings. Is he ideally for this team this year, not long term? This team this year, number four starter, high leverage bullpen guy. Is he on the playoff roster? What's the fit?
I think he's going to get another chance to start. I think that's the plan going forward. That this was sort of an aberration, but not what they're going to do. They're going to go forward and they're going to give him a start, and they're going to hope that he's good because they need him to start. This is, as we said before, this isn't a luxury item. That Peyton Tolley, they need to find a fourth starter, they need to find a fifth starter, and they need Peyton Tolley to be kind of good because they don't have a lot of other options. Now, Conley Early, great, unbelievable, awesome. But still, it's like we're putting cart before the horse a little bit if you think that he is the no doubt about it guy. Same thing with Peyton Tolley. We've already seen this, that you're going to have to adjust. The first time out is different than the second time out. That Peyton Tolley thing in Arizona was the ultimate lesson for any young pitcher. That's not to say that he can't be good, and that's not to say he can't help even in the postseason, because I still think if he adjusted, if he is able to throw another pitch decently, he can be a very valuable, if nothing else, reliever.
Okay. So, according to Bradfoe, Peyton Tolley is still being thought of as a starter at the back end of this rotation. Now, I think once the playoffs start, that is going to come down to how well Conley Early continues to pitch. If he keeps looking like he did in that first game, jumping jacks in the dugout and all, then it's going to be him as the number four guy, and Peyton Tolley will be a guy out of the bullpen or a long reliever or something like that, because you don't need five starters in the playoffs. You just don't. And that's an important factor to consider here. The other part of this, and this is a thing that I think people are kind of ignoring or just, you know, hand-waving away, is the idea that Peyton Tolley is not ready to be a starter on this team in a playoff run or in a pennant race quite yet. And I don't think that's a controversial statement. I don't. I've watched him pitch twice since that tremendous debut, and it was tremendous, against the Pittsburgh team, who strikes out a lot, but whatever. Went against a couple of pretty good offenses there in Arizona and in the A's, and he got knocked around. Now, you're more likely to be playing a team like that with a good offense in the playoffs than you are, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates of the world or some of these other teams that you played lately, but that's neither here nor there. The point is, the Red Sox have painted themselves into this corner a little bit, and I think this and the offense are the two biggest issues that they're facing.
Science!
Thank you, Bradfo. The back end of the rotation, and I only mean one spot, okay? That is still a humongous question mark. Peyton Tolley is a humongous question mark. Connelly Early is a humongous question mark. They just are. They're 22. They're getting parachuted in here in the last 2 weeks of September to try and fill out the back end of your rotation because Dustin May is on the IL and you didn't do anything else. Okay, that's why you're forced to do this right now. And I just hope that there's no long-term sort of effects with these young pitchers. I'm not saying I think there will be. I just really, really hope that there aren't. You know, we hear a lot about how young players, you can't rush them. You don't want to put them in positions where they're forced to come up and play and they're not ready to and it hurts their confidence or whatever. I mean, there's all sorts of different excuses for why people do or don't do things with their prospects and the way that they sort of go about that. But I think in this particular instance, you know, this isn't a guy getting a call up too early in the season. This is, okay, we're putting you into a pressure-packed situation and we're making you a starting pitcher on this team. And it's a team that already has three very good ones. And you, in the case of Peyton Tolley, were in single A this year, you know, and in the case of Connelly earlier, about the same age. I mean, this is just, you know, this is the point of no return, I would say, in terms of a youth movement. You've gone as far as you can. You've pushed this thing as far as you can. And let's just hope you didn't push it too far.
It is kind of funny, though. Do you remember at the beginning of the year, one of the strengths for the Sox was the depth of their starting rotation?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we knew Crochet was going to be Crochet. Maybe not to this level, but we
knew
he was
going to be
good.
Sean Newcomb, who we just saw the other day, was part of that.
Yeah, Newcomb was like a level-headed fifth starter. And then you had Quinn Priester down there. You had Richard Fitz. You had Hunter Dobbins. And now here we are with like 14 or 15 games left to go, and now we're concerned about the lack of pitching that they have. Not necessarily the arms, but the experience. Yeah. And like you said, like it's getting to a point where if it comes to a potential game four in a playoff series, you're going to have to call on one of these kids to take the mound, either might be on the road again in Yankee Stadium or on the road in Detroit, wherever that might be. A hostile environment on the road in a game four, potentially. That's kind of a scary proposition.
These are the pitchers who have pitched for the Red Sox this year, who have made starts for the Red Sox this year. Connelly Early's made one. Cooper Criswell's made one. Peyton Tolley's made three. Brennan Bernardino's made three starts. Dustin May's made five, same as Sean Newcomb. Tanner Houck has made nine. Tanner Houck, talk about a forgotten man. Richard Fitz, 10. Hunter Dobbins, 11. Walker Buehler, 22. Giolito, 23. Bayo, 25. And Crochet, 29. So you got three. Buehler's gone. You got three. You got three pitchers and a whole bunch of question marks. And that's it. I mean, that's what you got. And, yeah, you had depth at the beginning of the year. You had Tanner Houck. You had Fitz and Dobbins ready to go. You had Newcomb, who I don't know if that was really depth or anything. But
that wasn't going to last. It wasn't going to last.
He looked okay the other day. You know, like he's doing all right. He's still in the league.
I don't think anyone, though, this year is saying, oh, imagine if we still had Sean Newcomb.
I'm saying it right now, honestly. I'm saying it right now. You have a 22 and a 21-year-old or whatever, 23 and a 22-year-old trying to fill out the back end of that rotation. Sean Newcomb, at the very least, you know what he is. I have no idea what these two guys are. So far, Peyton Tolley looks like an interesting project. And Connelly Early looks like a jumping bean in that dugout. I mean, the kid's unbelievable. I was saying this the other night. I'm a big time, you know, foot tapper. I got that thing going, you know. I'm always like flicking my toes. I'm a big toe flicker. I don't know what that means about me. I got nothing on Connelly Early. That kid is unbelievable. I've never seen anybody that just charged up and nervous like all the time in a dugout before. That was incredible. I could never even come close. And, you know, Criswell, injury, Houck, injury. Some guys just didn't work out. Some guys got released. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different reasons here why you don't have any depth in your starting rotation. But the big one is because you didn't make a point of going out and getting it at the trade deadline. That's the main reason, and that's something they still have to live with and they still have to wear. And if these two kids don't work out at the back end of your rotation, I'm sorry, everybody. I mean, I'm sorry to the entire front office. I'm sorry to all of you. But, you know, Craig Breslow, John Henry, you all have to eat that because that was on you. Other teams made deals. Other teams brought in pitchers by either rentals or, you know, Begert and guys like that. I mean, there were pitchers out there that moved. You could have gotten in on that, and you decided to. You were good with Dustin May, and that's it.
I should point out, though, like the big name that was out there was Merrill Kelly, if you remember at the deadline. But if you remember the reports, Arizona wanted one guy, and then they would have made the name, and it was Connelly early.
Mm-hmm.
So for right now, you could say the front office is taking a victory lap, but not to say that they won't be taking the victory lap by the time that they actually might need Merrill Kelly.
Maybe. And yeah, Merrill Kelly, I mean, that's one name. There's a lot of pitchers who got moved other than Merrill Kelly, and the Red Sox sat there on the sidelines, and that's the point. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. You just heard the voice of Joe Braverman. He's going to get you caught up on what's trending, and when we come back, we will have your 630 headlines along with your phone calls at 617-779-7937. Here's
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry. Do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Joe. Got our 630 headlines coming up in just a minute here. It's the Christian Arcan Show. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. If you'd like to join the conversation, and we'll do that real quick before we get to headlines. We'll start with Darren in Belmont. Hi, Darren.
Hi, hey, how are you guys? Thanks for taking my call. I have a question and an observation, but can you name me three pitchers in MLB right now that have, I think, roughly 35 wins, close to a 3 ERA, or all up, potentially for Cy Young, but they're not going to win? To who are a Red Sox property?
Can I name you what?
Nick Pivetta. Didn't try to re-sign, who has a durability.
Pitchers who aren't on the Red Sox anymore. Got it. Okay. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead, since I don't think you were really asking me. You just wanted to say it. Go ahead there.
I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry. The kid from Milwaukee who just broke a record from Milwaukee for most consecutive wins for a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who we gave away for nothing.
Yep.
And then Eovaldi. And Eovaldi's been gone for a few years. But it's just like you're bringing up about the back end. And I don't understand how we can make those trades or give them away and not sign Pivetta, who has durability, who's always pitched well for us, for Walter Buehler, who got twice.
Oh, Darren, I think we lost you. Sorry, buddy. It was not me. I did not hang up on Darren. Sounds like his phone died. You're right. Nick Pivetta turned down the qualifying offer, and the Red Sox took all that Nick Pivetta money. And they handed it right over to Walker Buehler. That's how that happened. That's exactly what happened. Couple of things on that. Nick Pivetta pitching now for the San Diego Padres in a ballpark where home runs don't get hit very frequently, right? I mean, we all saw that series. Red Sox were hitting some bombs, and they would just die in the air. I don't know what it is about San Diego air, but it knocks down baseballs, and the wind was blowing in. And Nick Pivetta has given up so many fewer home runs than he certainly did with the Red Sox. And that's a thing that'll happen sometimes, you know? It used to be, back when there was no DH in the National League, that pitchers would want to go to the National League because one-ninth of the lineup was easier to pitch to. Now it's like you want to go to places where the parks are bigger. I mean, that's basically it. And San Diego's one of those places. They have this big, cavernous ballpark. Seattle used to be like that, too, before they moved the fence in. But, like, San Diego, it's still out there, and it's still a big, big, heavy, heavy air down there. And that's a big part of why Nick Pivetta's numbers are so much better. So for that one, I would say hindsight's obviously 20/20. It's a lot different from, say, Quinn Priester, who I agree giving him away was ridiculous. And a lot of people were mad when Nathan Eovaldi was not re-signed. But I don't remember any of that same kind of stuff for Nick Pivetta. I just don't remember. At the time when it happened, again, hindsight's 20/20, but at the time when it happened, there was almost nobody on the, oh, we really should have made a bigger effort to keep Nick Pivetta side.
Had been with the Sox for like four seasons that time, or at the time of his free agency last offseason, and it just never worked out. He had flashes, but he could never do it consistently.
ERA in the fours, now it's in the twos, you know? I mean, that's just the difference from playing from Fenway and then going out to San Diego. I mean, I think that's really all it is. Rob is in Boston. Boston Rob, what's up?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Loud and clear. What's up?
Oh, awesome, awesome. Just going to chat a little bit more about the Sox. Kind of challenge a bit not making moves during the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a younger guy enjoying, like, these prospects, I don't want to go back to the Dombrowski days when, like, we're just going to give away our entire farm system.
The Dombrowski days when they were winning, Rob? You didn't like when they were winning with Dombrowski?
But – But look what we had to face after it. Like, I like right now, Durant, Toley, like, the younger generation is following this team to a T. And I would honestly rather go in with Bale and Giolito as my third. We only need to carry four starting pitchers, really, for the playoffs. So, you know, I think we got some optimism that we can point out there, but I'd like to call out Derek. Derek, that was a good call, man. Good point. Pivetta was one of my favorite. I know he wasn't always consistent, but, man, he was there when we needed him, and he was always willing to go out there and get his best. So I'll let you guys chat about that.
All right, Rob, before you go, real quick, just hold on 1 second. You like the Garrett Crochet trade, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of prospects went in that trade is all. You know, I mean, that's all. A lot of prospects in the several trades. Okay? You know, a lot of prospects went for Chris Sale, and that ended up working okay. Dave Dombrowski made that work, and he kept Andrew Benintendi, and he had a decent farm system, even with all the prospects that he traded. You can trade a lot of prospects and then reload them in other deals. That's not really that hard to do. Chaim Bloom made a real big point of trying to preserve that farm system as much as he could and not really dip into it that much. And Breslow, it seemed like, was going to be right on that track, too. And then he had the Crochet trade, and I think that's a step in the right direction personally myself. But we can agree to disagree. All right, let's get to our 6:30 headlines.
This is 6:30 Headlines.
Okay, a couple of stories that I want to get to. We'll start with the Boston Celtics, in particular Jaylen Brown, who was on the radio in Atlanta and was asked a very scandalous question about his future.
Is there any chance?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, D.
Ever. I gotta play by the rules too.
Okay.
Is there any chance that we see you in a hometown uniform?
You never know. Okay. What's the rules? What rules you gotta play by?
I mean, I work down there, so I have to, you know. I don't need nobody calling me like, what you doing?
Tampering.
Yeah, right. I ain't doing that. Just, I would love to see you play for the hometown.
Nah, I feel you. Nah, I think my grandma would too.
Your grandma been talking to you about it?
Yeah.
Look, that's the biggest pressure there is.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, but you never know. We'll see.
I heard him talking about that this morning. I heard Courtney and Greg and everybody say he hates it in Boston. Why would you even open yourself up to it? What did he say that was offensive there? He didn't say anything offensive. He said, I don't know. We'll see. What's wrong with that? Of course we'll see. It's professional basketball. You don't know what's going to happen. You could get traded. Anything can happen. What's he supposed to say? Nope, no way. I'm never going to play here in my hometown where all my friends and family are. Like, there's no way I'm ever doing that. Yeah, that's smart. Why don't you go down there and take a dump on your hometown, the place you grew up in? Like, why would he do that? He didn't say he wanted to play in Atlanta. He didn't say he was dying to play in Atlanta. He said his grandma wanted him to, and I don't know, we'll see. That is the least offensive thing I've ever heard, all right? Jaylen Brown said way more offensive stuff than that in the past. That was nothing. I mean, really, I thought that was literally nothing. But it is going to lead to some headlines. It is going to lead to some clicks. But I heard that and I thought, that's it. That's what people are mad about. That wasn't really anything, I didn't think. And I got to tell you, Jaylen Brown's got the most velvety smooth voice I've ever heard. Like, he really does.
Yeah, but you never know. We'll see.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like butter, his voice. When he's doing music, right? He did like a rap song with, I forget who it was with. It was with someone from like the ASAP Mob or something like that. And it wasn't very good. But he doesn't need the rap. He should sing. You got a voice like that, you should sing.
ASAP Ferg,
thank you. My close personal friend, ASAP Ferg. But, you know, like, that's sort of what I... He's got a really good voice. As someone who listens to people's voices all day long, it's all I do.
You never know.
It's a good voice. It's a pleasing baritone. Let's get to our next headline. From the NFL, no discipline going to be handed down to Lamar Jackson, and good, there shouldn't be. If you missed this, Lamar Jackson shoved a Bills fan who had already slapped DeAndre Hopkins on the helmet and then slapped Jackson on the helmet, too.
Which is being considered the least violent thing Bills fans have ever done.
That's true. I mean, really, it was for Bills fans, I'd say it was very well restrained. But yes, Lamar Jackson not going to face any discipline. Brian McCarthy, NFL spokesman, said the matter has been addressed by the club. There is no further action from the league. The fan was ejected. He's also been indefinitely banned from Bills in all NFL stadiums. I don't know what was going on with that guy. I don't think what he did was the crime of the century, but you also can't hit players. I mean, you just can't do that. You just can't do that. And if they don't make an example out of him, then other people will think, well, that guy did it in Buffalo, so I'm going to go up there and slap a guy on the helmet, or maybe worse, you know? Like, that's, you can't do that.
And how dumb was it for him to do that, get ejected, and then miss an incredible ending?
I know, really. I mean, a tremendous, tremendous ending. I liked what Lamar said. He apologized to the fan. He said, I'm sorry about all that, but next time, just chill. It's like, it's well stated, Lamar. Like, I agree. You know, like, yeah, everybody, can everyone just chill? Can you just relax? Buffalo can't chill. Buffalo has no chill whatsoever. You see those people with their Zubas pants jumping onto flaming tables all soaked in alcohol. I mean, it's just there's no chill whatsoever there in Buffalo, except when they have like an ice out. But yeah, I thought that Lamar handled that right, and I think the NFL is right not to discipline him. All right, last headline. And this one comes to us from the NCAA. Where NCAA basketball, 13 men's college basketball players from six different schools were involved in gambling schemes, including betting against their own team, game manipulation, and sharing information with third parties for gambling purpose. The 80s are back, baby! Oh, yeah. Players formerly associated with the following schools: Eastern Michigan, Temple, Arizona State, go Sun Devils, New Orleans, North Carolina, A&T. What is A&T? What does that even stand for? North Carolina, A&T? And Mississippi Valley State are under investigation for gambling violations, according to the NCAA, which declined to name the athletes until the infractions process is concluded. None of the players are currently enrolled at the schools where the infractions occurred. Interesting. Do we know what A&T stands for?
A&T mostly commonly refers to the... This is the
I'm not asking what
give.
It's most... No, what is North Carolina is, A&T?
It stands for Agricultural and Technical State University.
Okay. A&T. So the agricultural school, they have a basketball team? It's a bunch of farmers out there with, like, suspenders. That's their uniforms. Or, like, denim suspenders. And they're gambling. That's the thing, is that they're gambling. You know what's amazing about this story? Is that there are about 1,100 college basketball teams, divisions 1, 2, and 3 in this country, and only 6 of them had players that were gambling. That's amazing. I honestly think that's amazing. What a tremendous accomplishment. Good job, NCAA. Or conversely, maybe the NCAA investigators need to be a little bit more on top of this, because let's be honest here. With gambling being just so prevalent and just in everybody's face all the time, this stuff is going to just keep on happening. It's going to keep on happening. What people who are just dead set on gambling and throwing their potential collegiate athletic career away to do so, if you're dead set on doing that, really it's all just about, you know, building a better mousetrap and trying to stay ahead of the people who are in charge of looking into these things and trying to cover it up and make it seem like it's not so obvious. That's really all it's about, but I don't trust that in the hands of a bunch of 19-year-olds. I just don't think they're smart enough to pull it off. Anyway, that is the headlines here.
Bunch of 19-year-old farmers.
Yeah, the 19-year-old farmers.
Who have no faith whatsoever.
North Carolina A&T. I don't. Do they even play their games indoors? Like, you know, I just picture
they play them in a barn.
I picture them all just outside in a field somewhere with like a board nailed to a tree. Like that's the hoop. You know, like that's how they play. That's what they do.
You're
up
saying
in North
like
Carolina
when they first
A&T.
Had the peach basket.
Seriously, you know,
think in those days.
And apparently, that's a team with a basketball school with a basketball team. Good for them. Do we know what they are? The North Carolina A&T. It's got to be the Fighting Farmers, right? Something like that. I don't know what they are. The men's basketball team. Hold on. I'm clicking on it right now. The Aggies. Lame. Aggies. Where are the Aggies? Shut up.
Well, Texas A&M are the Aggies.
Everybody's a bunch of Aggies. Like, shut up. What even is an Aggie?
They're agricultural
we're really
people.
Into
they
agriculture.
Just short it for Aggies.
And we're going to call ourselves the Aggies. Like, okay. That's really cool, guys. Cool job, Aggies. Anyway, a few Aggies not going to be playing this year because they were gambling. betting against their own teams, even. The anti-Pete Rose. Pete Rose always said, I never bet against the Reds. Like, yeah, okay, Pete. But these guys apparently did. So there you go. There's your headline. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we come back, Patriots and the Dolphins are locking horns in Miami this weekend on Sunday. A must-win game for both teams. We'll preview it next here on the Christian Arc.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Andrew. Christian Arcand Show here, WEEI. Can y'all feel that? Can y'all feel that? Before I get into this Patriots game, which I don't have a lot of time to talk about, a lot of people on the text line upset with my lack of knowledge about North Carolina A&T. And saying,
really? I expect you to be an expert on that.
Haven't you ever heard of Texas A&M? Yeah, A&M, different from A&T. Didn't realize it was the same kind of thing. And I just realized right now, I didn't know what the A&M and Texas A&M stood for until right now today. I had no idea. Agriculture and mechanics, I didn't know that. I thought it was arts and something. I literally had no idea. I know their name was the Aggies, but I didn't know why. I never decided to look into it. Anyway, North Carolina A&T is agricultural and technical. And A&M is agricultural and mechanical. So a little bit different, but basically the same. And then someone in Rhode Island is saying, hey, cool your jets, making fun of farmers who provide all the food that you eat in the back. I wasn't making fun of the farmers. I was questioning how good of a basketball team they had. All right? So relax, 401. I love farmers. Farmers are great. Never met a farmer I didn't like. But I could probably take them one-on-one. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Patriots and the Dolphins. In a game that is, I think, going to have more weight on it than any Week 2 game should ever have. This is what happens when you're a suckbag team and you're playing another suckbag team like the Dolphins. The difference here, though, is that the Dolphins at one point recently were actually considered a team on the rise. Not even, like, what, 2 years ago? Like, they were considered a team to watch out for. Tua coming back from the concussions, putting that offense together with Achane, who you heard, running all over the Patriots last year. And that's the other thing about it. As much as the Dolphins stink, and they do, they stink. They're a team that's in disarray. The Patriots, for some reason, are their antidote. The Patriots come to town. All right, well, at least we can get a little confidence back, okay? Whoever we hand it off to, they're going to get yards. Whoever we throw it to, they're going to catch it. Whoever we send after Drake May is going to get to him.
This also includes the Brady days, because every time the Pats went and Brady went down there to Miami, they always had difficulties.
You're absolutely right. And they had difficulties with the likes of Jay Fiedler, who looks exactly like Esoteric, the rapper, by the way, who is the rapper in my opening song. That song you hear, that's Czarface, which is Esoteric and MF Doom. So there you go. Rest in peace to MF Doom. But yeah, Jay Fiedler looks just like Esoteric. It's true. Look at two pictures of these guys. They look exactly the same. Anyway, they had trouble with him. They had trouble with Chad Pennington. I mean, they had trouble, you name it. They had trouble with all Cleo Lemon, all these bum Dolphins quarterbacks over the years, because for some reason the Patriots going down to Miami, especially early in the season, was always just like this non-starter. It's too hot. They can't deal with the mugginess or whatever it is, and they go down there and they get their ass kicked. And that's been going on for decades, really. I mean, it's been going on a very, very long time. And I'm not sure that this incarnation of the Patriots is the one that's going to break this particular trend. On the other hand, how bad have the Dolphins fallen off? That's a legitimate question. How much have they fallen off? Is Tyreek Hill even really a threat anymore? He's always a threat, a guy that fast and maybe, you know, off the field. But in terms of can he make those big plays, he's still fast, but can he catch and run? Does he still have that same escapability? Can he still get open the same way? Doesn't seem like he's getting the ball as much. And Jaylen Waddle's suffering from that, too. And I think part of it's Tua. Tua's not that good. And they really put all this, all their eggs in the Tua basket, which I thought was a mistake. But they kind of had to, you know. They were sort of fenced in. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to start over with all these weapons and all these receivers and everything, and you're just going to start over with a new quarterback now when you have a guy who's kind of picking it up? And Tua was in the MVP running a couple years ago, so it's not like it came out of nowhere, but this drop-off has certainly come quickly. And have they fallen off enough that the Patriots, who are still very much trying to find their own way, can go down there to Miami and beat them? I hate to tell you, I'm more on the Tommy Curran side. I am. I think this will be an entertaining game. I don't think it's going to be some suck-bag game. And I think both of these defenses are still either weak in the case of Miami or in the case of New England. Not weak, but not quite gelling yet. And it doesn't seem like Gonzalez is going to play.
I don't think so.
Gonzalez isn't playing. That makes a big difference in a passing game, in a vertical passing attack like the ones the Dolphins have. So I'm not feeling great about it. Maybe my thoughts will change over the next 48 to 72 hours before we have our Football Sunday show. But right now, I'm leaning towards the Patriots getting off to an 0-2 start, which, again, I don't think is the end of the world. People are talking about this game like it's the most important game that's ever been. I don't think it is. I think that it's going to be an early season game for a new team with a new coach and, you know, a team that's trying to figure things out and a Dolphins team that has already realized that they're playing for a lot here and that, you know, if they lose, this could mean their coach gets fired. This could mean all sorts of different things. The Patriots don't have that same kind of pressure. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. All right, that's your Patriots-Dolphins preview. When we come back, the Red Sox and the Yankees kick off a pretty important series starting tomorrow night. We'll preview that with your phone calls next. All right, we got about a half hour left here in the Christian Arcan Show before we pass things over to Thursday Night Football. Pretty good game tonight. The Washington Commanders visiting the Green Bay Packers. Both teams 1-0 to start the year so far. And guess what else, folks? We're going to have some dongs tonight. We will have dongs tonight. There's been some games already played in Major League Baseball that we can give you dong totals on. And also, really, the main reason why we're doing this is because I looked at the calendar, and we don't have any more full shows for the rest of the month. I mean, really, not one. That's Red Sox Monday through Friday with Thursdays out usually. But now we have Thursday Night Football and Monday Night Football for that matter as well. I don't have a show at all next Monday, right? I don't have any show because there's a Monday Night doubleheader, so I'm not on at all. So this is the rare opportunity we get to do anything like this, and we will have dongs tonight for you. Don't you worry. As I said before, we are an escape from the world, and there's no better escape than the dongs. The Red Sox and the Yankees start their series starting tomorrow. Speaking of escapes, let's go ahead to the phones and start with Matt in Rhode Island, who has a thought on that. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, RJ. Can I just give you a quick Patriots take? Because you mentioned the game in Miami, which I usually go down to this game because I'm from Pompano Beach, Florida, which is where. So, I mean, we've had terrible drafts, but I think the biggest draft miss ever is not taking LeVar Jackson in 2018. Yeah, he's a Pompano Beach kid. I've been watching him since high school, and he's only 28. Anyway, the series is huge. I've been relatively happy with what they've done since losing Roman Anthony. I mean, like, the other night when they called up that pitcher, he pitched great. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's what you should be doing if you're a Red Sox, like, organization. Let's not have these bullpen games. The series right here, I'm really confident that they've been beating their brains in. My point is, I think they should go play hard to the end of the season. I don't want to see them resting guys trying to just, like, squeak into the playoffs. You know, Toronto's not playing that good. Try to get the AL East. If not, take the first wild card.
Yeah, Matt, thanks for the call. Thanks for checking in. And I agree with you about Lamar Jackson. And I also agree with you about the Red Sox. This isn't the year to back into the playoffs. 2021, they really backed into the playoffs. There was that great Yankee series and, you know, the wild card and all that. But you remember that month of September was not a great month. They were never – I don't know that they were ever really in danger of getting knocked out of the playoffs, but – they did not have a good, strong finish to the end of that year, which is to say that sometimes you don't really need to. They didn't finish the year very strong, but they went on to the ALCS. And so I think that, you know, kind of tells you that just getting in is the important thing. Just get in. Get in and worry about the rest of it later. You haven't been in since then. And
there's
that
also,
was a while ago.
There's also incentive, as Matt was saying, to keep playing hard and go for the division, because if you get the division,
right,
you have a chance for one of those buys. More rest time, possibly getting Roman Anthony back. Like, there's plenty of incentives to keep going after the division.
Absolutely. And it would be silly for them not to, or to not prioritize that as much, because what? You know, like, you have such a big lead in the wild card. You don't, by the way. Texas just doesn't lose anymore. You notice the Rangers don't lose any games anymore? Wherever that started, I don't know why. I mean, they're not even that good. But they've suddenly come out of nowhere, and they're just steamrolling everybody. Texas Rangers have won 7 out of their last 10, 4 in a row. The Mariners have won 5 in a row. You know, these other teams are all keeping the pace here. And some teams are trying to knock on that door. The Rangers are only a game and a half back. And the Mariners keep winning, so that's keeping them, you know, at bay. But eventually the Mariners keep winning, and then the Red Sox lose 2 out of 3 to the Yankees. You know, I mean, it's just, it can all go sideways pretty quickly is all I'm saying. And you'd hate to see that happen against a team that you've dominated. And they've dominated the Yankees this year. More so than almost any year I can remember. It's rare that they really are able to go out and just pound the Yankees like this, like they've done this season. It's almost like too perfect, you know? Like, that's why I'm concerned about it.
I do have Matt's level of confidence because that bullpen is just so bad for the Yankees.
It is dreadful.
It is so bad. What was it? Back-to-back nights of giving up like 9 runs and then 7 runs to the Tigers? Like, just get through the starters. Knock them out in the fifth inning, and then it's icing on the cake, no matter who comes out of that bullpen.
Tigers knocked them around this last couple of games. Absolutely. Let's go to Paul in Westfield. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Christian. How are you, bud?
What's up, Paul?
A little short time.
I know.
Christian, I was absent by default, just in shock and amazement, just enjoying it and listening to everyone. And, you know, this is our first winning season in 4 or 5 years. And then with this last series, we lost the third game by a run. And then the first two, I think it was 7-6 to nothing. So you got 13 to nothing. We have the best hit run differential. Mm-hmm. The potential with the exploding offense, Giolotto and Whitty and Whitlock. And then, of course, finally, Chapman gave up a hit. Think this guy, Connolly Early, with the last name first and a first name last, mm-hmm. appears in then the 11 Ks. Christian, this is mouthwatering. This is teasing you and me telling you, hey, when we can bring guys up, add it to our stack pitching staff that might perform and do right, and then the bats that are like whack-a-palooza, there's no reason why not the doomsday, but the other day could happen. And by some fluke, we get there and actually pull it off in the first winning season and go on a run. It's not completely unforeseeable based upon the fact that no one is really dominating this year. It's
true.
Still kind of open this late in the season. So be well and do well, one play at a time.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. Technically, the Red Sox do not have a winning season yet. There is a chance, albeit not a big one, that they go 0-15 down the stretch here and finish the season 81-81. Now, I'm not saying I think that's going to happen. I don't. Technically, it's not yet a winning season, Paul. It will be soon. Maybe as soon as tomorrow. You know what else may happen as soon as tomorrow? If Aaron Judge hits 2 home runs, then he ties Joe DiMaggio on the all-time Yankee list. Talked about this a little last night. I can't believe this list. The top of it's an amazing list anyway, but that's not what I'm talking about. The top of the list is Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, Lou Gehrig, Joe DiMaggio, Aaron Judge. There's your top five. Quite a list. I mean, in terms of like baseball history, that's one of the best lists that's ever existed. But what I'm struck by is the fact that Aaron Judge is fifth. He just passed Yogi Berra, and earlier this year he passed A-Rod at 7. But that's about it. He passed everybody else a long time ago. And what's crazy to me is that the Yankees, during the peak of the steroid era, only had, like, they had all these homegrown players that, you know, Bernie Williams and Jeter and Posada and all these guys. But when they needed a thumper, when they needed a big bat, they went out and they got one. They got Giambi, they got Sheffield, they got A-Rod, they got, you know, whoever. Like, they went out and they, Mark Teixeira and Robinson Cano was homegrown, but you know what I mean. Like, they would go out and do that. Tino Martinez and Paul O'Neill. And some of these guys, Don Mattingly even didn't hit that many home runs. It's pretty wild that for a team that played at Yankee Stadium, where it's easier to hit a home run than some minor league stadiums, that Aaron Judge shot past all the steroid era Yankees and is now knocking on the door of the top four, and the top four being Ruth, Mantle, Gehrig, DiMaggio. That, I think, is kind of amazing. I really do. Like, I think that's pretty incredible. Just the way that all worked out. Because the Yankees were a dynasty. I mean, for the 90s into the 2000s, that was a major baseball dynasty. And all of their sluggers, all of their, like, major home run hitters, everybody talks about how great that was because of all their homegrown guys. But you know who was hitting the dongs? The hired guns, the Sheffields and the Giambis and the A-Rods of the world, the people that they brought in, not their homegrown guys. Their homegrown guys were good. But isn't that funny how through the steroid era with the Bronx Bombers, Aaron Judge is ahead of all of them. Like, he's ahead of everybody from that era in Yankee home runs. He's not, you know, A-Rod hit a bunch of other home runs in other places. But you know what I mean? Like, I just find that so funny, you know, because these are lifelong Yankees. Jeter and Williams and Posada, those guys played forever. And Judge just blew right past all of them, like, years ago. And now he's getting up there with the all-time greats. I think that's kind of cool. Screw the Yankees, obviously. But a list like that, I mean, you gotta give it up for that. And you got to give it up for Judge, too. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We're going to take a quick break here. Joe Braverman is going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, we got the taters. We got the goners. We got the dingers. We got the dongs. The Dong Report is next.
Yes, indeed! It is time!
on this Thursday, September 11th, 2025. If you're new to the Dong Report, usually we have it much later in the show, as it is a recap of all the home runs, dongs that were struck during the day. And since we're doing it very early here, there are some games that have gone final. But we're going to be maybe hoping for some late breakers because it's not a very big total at the moment. I won't spoil it any more than that. First, before we get to our notable dongs of the week, here's Will Fleming out of context.
So shorty at first, not like a melody.
Na 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 na, every day. It's like Will Fleming's iPod is stuck on replay. All right, here's some notable dongs for the week. How about Cal Raleigh, the big dumper? Two dongs this week. On Saturday, he hit his 52nd of the year in Atlanta off of John Brebbia. On Sunday, he hit his 53rd dong of the year off of Roldy Munoz? Roldy Munoz? I don't know. I've never seen him before. Both of those dongs came in the ninth inning of a blowout. Doesn't matter. Dongs still count. And one more dong for Cal Raleigh, and he will tie Mickey Mantle for the most dongs hit by a switch hitter ever in Major League history. Other notable dongs to tell you about. How about Kyle Schwarber? He hit his 50th dong of the year on Tuesday. That was on Tuesday against the Mets. He hit it off of John Hagemann, and he's only the second Philly to ever hit 50 or more home runs. Joe, do you know the other one?
I believe that would be one Ryan Howard.
Absolutely right. Ryan Howard back in 2006. The baseball player, not the guy from The Office. Although Ryan Howard, the baseball player, was in The Office when Jim had that athlete thing. And he was, like, all into Subway. He kept saying, eat fresh over and over again, remember? And then he had that weird idea for a movie where he was, like, a alien, but he saved the world or something. I forget. It was actually a pretty funny storyline. Despite the fact that people say that those later seasons of The Office weren't any good, there was funny moments in them. They weren't good, but they had their moments.
They had moments. They weren't great episodes.
Robert California had moments. You know, he had some moments. Was he great? No. You know what really wasn't good at any point was when Will Ferrell was the new boss. Will Ferrell, I don't know how they made him unfunny, but, like, Idris Elba was funnier than him. And Idris Elba was, like, actively trying not to be funny. Anyway, some more dongs to tell you about. How about Mookie Betts?
It's time to party!
Four dongs this week for Mookie, and that's, I mean, since last Thursday. He is dongs in three of his last four games and has driven in 13 runs in his last five games. Mookie making a strong charge here at the end of September after a pretty lackluster season, let's be honest. These dongs that he hit four dongs, numbers 15, 16, 17, and 18. Hasn't really been hitting for power much this year. Was he injured this year? Was Mookie hurt this year or no?
I feel like he was at the beginning of the year. Other than that, I think he's just been quiet.
All right. Josh Bell hit four dongs this week. Thank you very much. He had a double dong night on Monday. And he still continues to hit for that hapless Washington team. And then how about Aaron Judge? Aaron Judge hit one on Tuesday and is now two dongs away from tying Joe DiMaggio on the all-time Yankee dong list. Judge has 359. DiMaggio has 361. He is 134 dongs away from Lou Gehrig, 177 away from Mickey Mantle, and an even 300 away from Babe Ruth, 659 dongs with the Yankees. Your dong leaders would be Cal Raleigh with 53, Kyle Schwarber with 50, Shohei Ohtani has 48, Eugenio Suarez 45, Aaron Judge clocks in with 44, Junior Caminero with 42, Juan Soto 39. Here's a name that surprised me this high on the dong list, Joe Adele. Since when is Joe Adele socking dongs like that? I had no idea. Anyway, good for Joe Adele.
Hello.
Hello, Joe Adele.
It's me.
It is. Pete the Meat Alonso with his 33rd dong of the year. Riley Green, or 33 dongs this year. Riley Green has 33. Byron, I like Big Buxton, I cannot lie with 31. And Rafael Devers also has 31, too. Trevor Story leads the Red Sox with 24 dongs. He's tied for 42nd in the league. He also has more home runs than both Manny Machado and Matt Olson. So good on you, Trevor Story. As for our leading friends of the Dongs, the leader is the leader who's been the leader all year. That's Zach Littell has given up 34. Jake Irvin in Washington's given up 33. Bailey Ober of the Twins, 29. Tyler Anderson in Anaheim, 28. Jeffrey Springs, who the Red Sox just saw and hit a bunch of dongs off of, has 28. Zach Gallen, 28 for him. The following pitchers have given up 27 dongs. That would be Seth Lugo, Chris Paddock, J.P. Sears, Tomas Sugano in Baltimore, Tanner Bibee in Cleveland, and then Shane Boz and Ryan Pepiot, teammates in Tampa, are tied with 26 dongs. For the Red Sox, Dustin May has given up 21 dongs. He leads the Red Sox. and he only leads Garrett Crochet by one single solitary dong. Garrett Crochet has given up 20 dongs this year.
It's always like Crochet gives up like one every other start, and then he had that bulk where it was like three in the same inning.
That was tough. That was tough for Crochet, to be sure. But yeah, I mean, it's really unusual for him. All right, without any further ado, let's get to the dongs of the day, and we will start with some games that have gone final already, like the Pirates and the Orioles.
Right up the keister.
There's a lot of keister talk this morning. For the Pirates, Alexander Canario with his sixth dong of the year, a 409-footer, and... 409 feet is all it takes. If you don't know what that was the long dong gong, and we ring it for you every time the longest dong of the night has been struck. So far, that's it. We may get some late breakers, but right now, Alexander Canario with his 409-footer. Congratulations, sir, on your very long dong. Not enough for the Pirates, though. They fall to the Orioles by a final of 3-2. Another game to tell you about would be the White Sox and the Tampa Bay Rays.
He's still functionable.
Functionable. White Sox take down the Rays 5-1, but no dongs. I know, I'm disappointed too. Speaking of being disappointed, the White Sox did beat the Rays, but the Blue Jays, another team in the American League East, already done with their game as well against the Houston Astros.
But the big toe flicker?
I am a big toe flicker. I can't help it. Disappointed because the Blue Jays already won. So they're going to pick up a half game on the Red Sox going into tomorrow. One home run for the Blue Jays, and it was struck off the bat of Davis Schneider. I barely know her. His 11th dong of the year, a 360-footer. No homers for the Astros. As I said, the Blue Jays win 6-0 as they pick up a game on the idle Red Sox. And also the idle Yankees. No, the Yankees are playing. The Yankees are in action against Detroit right now. As a matter of fact, let's head to New York for that game. You're a suckbag team, and you're playing another suckbag team. Indeed. Sunday night football. Sunday day football, I should say. They're not putting that game on Sunday night. No way. Tigers and the Yankees. This game so far doesn't appear as any home runs have been struck. Ah! Yeah! Woo! Ladies and gentlemen, that is our late breaker gong, and that is Aaron Judge has hit one. He is now one dong away from Joe DiMaggio.
Hold on 1 second, Arcan. Yes? There is one more note about Aaron Judge.
Okay.
The new long dong gong of the night. 413 feet.
Yeah! A late breaker long dong. Again, it's a small total. So what are you going to do? Aaron Judge, a 413-foot dong to center field. It's just about enough to get one out in center field at Yankee Stadium. He is now one dong away from jolting Joe DiMaggio and tying his home run record with the Yankees. The Yankees leading that game now by a score of 1-0. So the Yankees and the Blue Jays conceivably. Woo!
Yeah! Ah! The Pasquatch has gone deep between the Royals and the Guardians. The 30th of the year for Vinny. But no long dong go.
Oh,
long,
too bad.
No long dong. 398 feet.
And that was a game we haven't even gotten to on the list yet. The Royals and the Guardians.
Well, we're running short
Cleveland.
On time. We got to fit them all in.
We certainly are. Mets and the Phillies is underway.
And no dongs in that one.
No dongs in that game either. All right, there you go. That is your total.
That brings us to four.
Add them
we
all
had two
up.
Late breakers.
Carry the two. That is a four dong night.
You better say the obvious one. You better say the obvious number four.
A Brett Favre four?
No! Bobby Orr!
Bobby Orr four?
A Bobby Orr four.
Adam Vinatieri four?
There you go.
It's a lot
Bailey
of
Zappi.
Bailey Zappi was four? I thought Bailey Zappi was seven, huh? What was Bailey Zappi's number? Hold on. Now I'm
He was four.
Was he definitely four?
Yeah.
Why am I picturing Zappi with a seven on his jersey?
I don't know.
Am I tripping? I might be tripping.
I think you are tripping.
Yeah, he was four and now he's two. He was never seven. What am I thinking of? Brissett seven? Who was seven?
Were you thinking of Jacoby Brissett?
I might have been thinking of Jacoby Brissett. A Bobby Orr four, of course. The great Bobby Orr. Lot of fours. Chauncey Billups four. With the Celtics. We're probably going to have to stop it right there. You can send in your fours if you want to at Christian Arcan, at Joe Braverman, PBP. We got to get out of here because it's time for Thursday Night Football. Four dongs, better than no dongs. That's all for me. I'll be back tomorrow. Red Sox pregame, Sox and the Yankees. Talk to you then. Good night now.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.